Hello and welcome to Indiana Home Cooks, where we share the stories of people who cook, eat, and drink in the Hoosier State. I'm Susan Mintert. Anyone who knows me knows that barbecue is a style of cooking that's near and dear to my heart. And it's one that most people love in one iteration or another. And there are plenty of styles to choose from coast to coast and north to south in the U.S. Closer to home, Lee Stanish took his own style of barbecue from his backyard to weekend events with friends to catering for groups and finally to establishing his own barbecue restaurant in West Point, Indiana. Lee Stanish grew up on a farm in southwest Pennsylvania, and he credits his Polish immigrant grandparents as early influences and a family friend who connected him with Purdue University. That led him to West Lafayette for studies in agricultural economics. And by the time he arrived in Indiana and at Purdue, he already had plenty of barbecue experience, beginning with building his own smoker while still in high school.
So my uncle had a machine shop growing up, and I spent a lot of time in there, and I thought, well, you know, surely I can build one of these things. So I built my first smoker. It was kind of trial and error, and the first one was very rudimentary, but it worked really well. And then when I moved here permanently, that smoker had stayed at my dad's home place, and he said, you know, I'd like to keep that around. Don't take it with you. So he kept it, and I knew I'd have to build another one. And so I started gathering parts when I built my new house, or purchased my new house, rather. I started gathering necessary parts and trying to make a 2.0. Hmm. So I built that 2.0 here and then began using it for weekend events and such. And I still use it today. We still take it to People's Brewing Company and certain different events we have. So it's been a fun machine to work with.
And so at that time then, you were doing your own smoking, not just for your own benefit or just for friends and gatherings and so forth, but you were getting out a little bit more of doing events and things, is that right?
Yeah, so I mean, once people would eat at your house, because it kind of became a gathering place for us to, you know, smoke meat and talk about it and whatever. And so people then would ask, you know, well, can you do this for me and do that for me? And so it wasn't a full-time job by any means. It was more of a weekend warrior thing, and it worked great because I was at Purdue, and it gave me something to, you know, just that was fun to do in my spare time.
So at some point, you decided to go full-time into this activity of yours, smoking meat. What was that push that got you to do that?
Well, when I moved back permanently to start into the working in the Purdue College of Ag, that's when I really started to actually meet what I'll call local people. So, you know, up and through then, my time at Purdue was much more transient with students and people that were passing through. Mm-hmm. And once I bought the house here and began working for Purdue, I actually began meeting local people. And one of the places we had always come to eat during our college days was the West Point Steakhouse. And we spent a lot of time here, and enjoyable time. And through those years, I had met the sons. There were three sons of the original owners, or the, you know, the prior owners. And we all became really good friends. And we spent time together doing all sorts of things. And we had found out that the oldest son and I both liked to smoke meat. So he was really into it, though he worked full-time in farming. He was real interested, real involved. And once we kind of connected, we found we were a really good fit because he was like ultra energetic and has a lot of energy. And I had the planning, right? So it was like, you know, he could see some of these visions and let's go do that. He'd be talking to people and getting jobs set up. And he'd be like, now tell me what that costs, you know. And so I'd do a lot of the planning and some of the behind the scenes work. And then we would both cook together and execute the jobs. And so it wasn't until later that I actually made the whole connection that his father owned the restaurant. So we were kind of friends before that happened. And once then, both I understood that and his father understood that, our lives changed forever, because then his father realized he could put us to work and we were both pretty good at what we did. And so then they took the hobby from, you know, Lee's weekend, you know, warrior to like, kind of like a substitute restaurant help kind of weekend thing. Mm-hmm. And so when they would run their smoker events like Taste the Tippecanoe or other things, I would go and help. And it became, the phone would just ring on a Tuesday and I'd hear Doug say, you know, I'm going to need help tonight. What are you doing? You know, and so we kind of really got involved. Then they decided they had an opportunity to retire out of the business and that they were going to sell the business. And that was really kind of kept fairly internal. We were completely unaware that that transition was happening. Mm-hmm. And one day he just came in and said, hey, we sold the place. And that kind of changed all our lives in a significant way. The new owner wanted to come in and had his own ways. And so we kind of were excerpted from, you know, that style of what we had been doing.
So the West Point Steakhouse was under new ownership, and Lee was a bit on the outside looking in. And for whatever reason, the restaurant was struggling to gain its footing with the new owner and was close to closing its doors when Lee's friend and barbecue partner Doug suggested Lee step in and buy the place himself. And the seed was planted.
I mean, it was several months of a lot of soul searching about, you know, is this really a good idea? Is this really what I want to do? Should I try it? Should I not try it? And there were other job opportunities that were coming up for me. And, your standard next step. Everyone gets the next step job opportunity in whatever they're doing in their life at the time. And the next steps were starting to come up. And then at the same time, this was happening. Mm-hmm. And I had to make that decision, like a conscious decision that, you know, I'm going to do this or not do it. And so I finally made the decision. And then once you make the decision, everything changes, because now it's not about, am I going to do it or not do it? It's about, how are we going to make it happen? Mm-hmm. You know, all the financing and all the, you know, repairs and all the figuring out what the menu is going to look like, because basically I had an empty building, I had no staff, and I had a menu that we were preparing to basically throw in the garbage and start over from.
Right. Yeah.
And so I have some good friends in that do work in the food business corporately. Having gone to Purdue and, you know, been a part of the Purdue College, you know, we talked about what does a concept need to look like, and, you know, versus just saying, you know, we really like barbecue, so we're going to hang a shingle out and sell barbecue because that's what we want to do. And so there was a lot of thought that went into what should the concept look like, knowing that that would then give us kind of a North Star for directions of decision making. And so once we picked the concept, then the business plan got wrote around that. And, it was kind of designed as Tex-Mex and barbecue, one, because Lafayette didn't have something in that niche space, and then two, because we knew that, you know, with all the barbecue we would have, it would make a great complement to go into that Tex-Mex.
With the barbecue Tex-Mex theme ironed out, it was on to the necessary renovations, hiring and training of staff, inspections, and in May of 2016, opening night.
I think we did it on a Wednesday night, if I remember right. Business was insane, like any new restaurant for the first, you know, 3-4 months. And it's just crazy because, like, you know, you're so busy, but everyone hasn't found a rhythm. You know, the team hasn't yet found a rhythm. They don't know each other. They haven't worked together. You know, you have 14, 15 people who don't yet know where the garbage cans are, but there's 400 people waiting out the door to be serviced, you know, through a dinner service. And it was just a crazy, crazy time.
Wow.
Just nuts.
Learning on the fly, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, from the get-go. As you were kind of going through this, I'm sure you had second thoughts, thinking, is this really a smart thing to do?
Sure.
What I've jumped into? I mean, you had to have those doubts.
Well, you have so much financial investment at a point which you just have to almost continue to press forward, but the banking was probably the worst. I mean, I don't know of a business model that a bank is more cautious about than a restaurant. They just, you know, the statistics are not good of restaurant livelihoods past 1 to 3 years. And so the financing was extremely difficult. It was really tough times. I mean, there were nights when it was just really tough, and I'm very thankful for the people who were helping me kind of clean up the space. They were probably as much moral support as maybe more than they know. On the nights when you were just like, maybe I did the wrong thing, or, you know, is this ever going to work? But it was really, really helpful to have that strong support base. And, you know, then once the doors are open, then the game's totally different. So, you know, I think about it as during that space of the opening phase, you have certain startup issues that you know, plague the business, so to speak, of how do we get it off the ground and how do we level it out. But the reality is that in our business, in the restaurant industry, the turnover rate is really high, which is unfortunate. But that's a whole different podcast for a different day. So staffing definitely has had its challenges to keep consistency on the, you know, the client side of the base. But in terms of leveling out from the client perspective, after that first year or so, people learn how to use your product. They're going to make decisions about how your product fits their lives or doesn't fit their lives, or whether they're going to order it as takeout, or whether they come on Wednesdays or they're every Saturday night, or, you know, they learn how to use your product. And then that eventually kind of generally levels sales into a plateau.
Yeah. Something you can at least start to predict a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, your style here is Texas barbecue and Tex-Mex. Describe Texas barbecue, how it's distinct from other styles.
Sure.
And why you are in that particular style.
Well, it was a number of reasons. When I originally looked at the space, I had spent some time in Texas, and I've seen barbecue places in different regions of the earth. And when I looked at this space and we were trying to think about that concept, it struck me that the South Texas Ice House looked a heck of a lot like the space we're in, both in the physical building as well as in the surroundings. So, you know, you didn't find an ice house in a strip mall. You found an ice house in a remote location, you know, off the beaten path. And so that concept is a little bit of what I tried to look at when I put the space together, in terms of having that barbecue kind of feel, but also having like the Tex-Mex and the, you know, the tacos and the enchiladas kind of feel. So it went with the space and it went with the design of the space. And so it just seemed like kind of like a good match. You know, when you think about the Tex-Mex, I mean, you know, you can draw your own conclusions of what an enchilada and tacos, you know, that kind of a feel. And in the barbecue, it's more of a, you know, light seasoning kind of a thing. So we're not like ultra heavy seasoned. And the other thing I really always had a pet peeve about is when you go to most barbecue places, they generally, out of the ease of operations and logistics, use all the same flavor wood so that they can smoke, you know, multiple meats in the machine all at the same time, which is a great idea in practicality. Mm. But then you don't really get, in my opinion, the depth of flavor in different things. It'd be like saying that everything you eat will be good if you put pepper on it, right? I mean, so that's not always the case, or not in the same amounts.
Yeah.
So with the meats, I wanted to be able to choose and pick that we could do what woods complemented the meats the best. And so that makes our logistics plan really difficult in terms of cooking. But it also, I think, yields something where you have a really nice complement with the flavor of the smoke that you're going to taste on the meat.
I had to see for myself Lee's smoker, where the magic happens. So we stepped outside Eddie Joe's, where the smoker is parked street side.
This was one of my largest fears when we first started, because you don't really operate a smoker, you date it. You date it for a long time and you get to know each other. And until you get to know each other, you haven't yet figured each other out. And then eventually you get to a point where you're either happy with the relationship or not happy with the relationship. So to think that you would just open a restaurant with a machine that you really didn't operate was probably one of my biggest fears. Okay. You know, I didn't have a relationship built with the machine, and I didn't know its isms and how it liked to cook hot over here and cold over there and all these types of things that you think about. So, you know, the machines I had operated with, I'd operated with for many years, and so my comfort level was very high with me being able to go to an event and know that it was going to, you know, perform and react as I anticipated. So when we first started, I mean, it took me a while, but I'm happy to say that we've built a great relationship together.
That is reassuring.
It is.
That's a little bit where I'm at with my Big Green Egg. We're still in the dating process,
yes.
I think, because I am still learning. So,
and so eventually you come to find, like I say, if it's, if it's just something you feel comfortable with. I mean, there are a lot of different designs of smokers, and I've used most of them, and almost all of them are very productive, but, you know, it's part of its end result. Of course, today's technology has changed a lot. Machines are better insulated, but the reality is you're still trying to produce an ambient temperature inside your box, and exteriorly, you know, you can have a lot of different temperatures happening outside. So that's why when you see some designs of barbecue restaurants today, they've moved that inside to where the smoker's in the house, and that gives a little bit better control of that. This really wasn't designed that way, and I guess I didn't have a big knee-jerk to, you know, redesign my kitchen with my smoker inside of it and all those types of things. So we've gone with an exterior design. But basically we have a lot of fan systems in the machine so that the box is kept as even as humanly possible. Natural draft does most of it, but older machines relied 100% on natural draft. And in today's machines, there's multiple fans in the machine to help circulate the heat and the smoke and keep it even. The other thing we do is our machine rotisseries inside, so that also helps with the equalization of temperature across, because it's constantly in motion while the meat's being processed. Okay. So basically we have a firebox on one end, much like most machines, and then within that firebox I put my wood, my charcoal blends that I want to use, and I can change that based on what I'm cooking. And then we have basically a propane backup. Propane does two things. One, it starts the machine, so it starts the fire, so that I don't have to use lighter fluid, charcoal, whatever. And, you know, you can never imagine the ease of that when you begin doing this every day for a living, you know, starting the fire every day, you know. I have my hats off to the old timers of people who do, you know, complete 100% wood fires to either keep them going all the time so it never goes out, or restarting it every day. So we use propane to start, makes it nice and quick and easy. Then the other thing, like I say, with the cold Indiana winters, that helps me. If the temperature is ultra cold, we can use propane to supplement the heat that the smoke is providing. Smoke is a flavor, and I can make this thing produce 300 degrees in temperature any day of the week, but it's going to produce a lot of smoke too. So I have to manage my smoke for my flavoring, and if I have that, you know, way up here, then I can't, it will over-season the meat, essentially. So that propane helps me balance the temperature that's outside with the amount of smoke that I want to apply, not the amount of smoke I would be forced to apply to keep it a certain temperature, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So what is the temperature that you are aiming for?
Everything is different. So when you have you know, baby back ribs or beef tenderloin or a more delicate cut, it's going to focus more around 200 degrees, 210 degrees for most of its cook. When you have a bigger cut of meat, you know, you have the capacity to be able to get a little bit warmer, so we'll go up to maybe like 225, 230 on our briskets and our pork butts. And then you can always finish hot at the end so that you don't dry out. But it's nice to be able to have that long, slow cook to allow things to really loosen up and be soft and tender. You know, and that's just a different mantra. There are some people that'll do a great job with cooking meats, and they'll cook them much faster and much hotter. I guess it's like no-till or tillage. You either do one or the other, and you both have a religion about it. So we cook probably a little lower and a little slower than, you know, others might so choose to.
I don't think you can beat low and slow for all of those things. You talked earlier about different types of wood for different meats. What are your best pairings along those lines?
So we can look at some. I like to use, I like the flavor of mesquite, but mesquite is a very aggressive flavor, right? It's very, very strong. So what we do is we take and pair the mesquite with pecan wood, which is a really nice complement, and pecan is much softer. And so that pairing, to me, gives you some mesquite flavor, yet it's not as aggressive. That's really what it comes down to. I mean, you can have your personal preference, but the customer's palates aren't maybe as advanced, no different than a winemaker can taste things that you can't taste. You know, I taste this stuff and taste real subtleties that some people may never notice, but when I think about it, that's how I think about it, is that, you know, we don't want it to be so aggressive that it turns off some audiences from the smoked flavor, but I want it to be a good deep smoke flavor. So when I pair those two, I think that works really well for our beef products. So anything that we do that's a
beef product, we'll get that mesquite pecan blend. I personally like wild cherry. I've liked it ever since I was 13 years old. Now, all of a sudden, in the last 10 years, people have found this as like the new favorite, you know, top runner, so to speak, of smoking wood choices. But I've always liked it on pork. I think it does a great job with pork. It adds a light sweetness that you won't get from other woods. So we use it on our pork. We also use it on our chicken products. And then really the only thing we use hickory for is mostly ham and some sausages. So hickory has a very distinct flavor, and I like it. But it's just like that song on the radio that gets played over and over and over until it's no longer good. And I think hickory is just a little overused in the overall marketplace. And that's why we kind of determine it down to just a few products where I think it's best suited.
But those are the combinations that you stick with here at Eddie Joe's.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then what about seasonings? You mentioned Texas style barbecue. Not as, you know, aggressive on the seasonings without giving away secrets or anything. Kind of what do you guys like to do?
It's not dissimilar from the things that you would commonly place. So, you know, on beef in Texas, you'll find mostly salt and pepper. We go a little bit extra here. There's a little bit of garlic flavor in ours, and we have a little bit of heat that we add to ours. But it's still a very basic light seasoning. And yet that works really well as complement to the smoke. I mean, if you were going to cook something in the oven and you didn't have the layer of smoke as a layer of seasoning, it could be different. But I think when you have that layer of smoke gone to the extent that we try to do, then you get a nice, you know, a nice complement.
I haven't asked you about sauces. What's your sauce philosophy?
Well, I mean, I feel like if I've done my job well, you really shouldn't need it. I mean, do you need ketchup on a ribeye steak? Probably not. You would think and hope not. But the reality is there's a group of people who really enjoy that as a complement to their barbecue. And so we offer sauce, but it goes on the side. And that way, if you want to put sauce on it to add that complement and add that extra layer, you can. But if you want to enjoy it in its kind of virgin sense, then you can do that as well.
I like your philosophy. That's mine too. Sauce on the side. It has to be. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit too about the name Eddie Joe's Ice House.
Yep. So I pretty well had a business plan laid out. I had a menu laid out. I had staffing kind of organized, but I just couldn't come up with a good name. I didn't have a creative bone in that space. And it just kind of struck me, you know, the grandparents were a very influential force in my life. You know, as you look back, you maybe realize how lucky you were to live that close to them. You know, them being married 64 years, things that you just don't see today. And it just, that had a big impression on me. And I remember that before I was born, Grandpa had a gas station, and it was like a gas station slash pit stop place where you could get an oil change or, you know, brake work done or whatever. And the remnants of that were there as a child for me, you know, but it was never in operation when I was alive. And so I asked Dad, I said, what did, you know, Pap used to call that place? And he said he called it Eddie Joe's. And so I was like, well, I think that sounds like just a great place, a great name for the restaurant. So it gave us kind of a neat story to be able to tell and kept that familial, you know, that piece alive. And yeah.
And it's a very welcoming, you know, name and casual, informal. It's just like, come on in, you're at Eddie Joe's, and you just feel welcome, I think, just when you walk up to the door. So you're here in West Point, very, very small rural community, and we're just west of Lafayette. Former West Point Steakhouse was in this location, and that was an anchor in this community for many years. Do you feel like at this point yet that you have taken that mantle, that you are an anchor now in West Point for this community?
Well, it's interesting because the businesses were a little bit different. So in my personal opinions, I think West Point Steakhouse was a strong catering to the local community. Whereas with Eddie Joe's, we kind of have a little bit of a split. That's not good, bad, or indifferent. It just is what it is. And that since our product is so unique, people will travel a distance to get here. So when you think about our portfolio of customers, we have that travel customer who comes in as a destination diner, and then we have our local customer who's within a radius. And I would say that the local customer base might have been a little bit bigger when it was West Point, because it was more of a bar kind of a nature, whereas we're more of a restaurant kind of a nature. So I do feel like we've been accepted and appreciated by the community, A lot of people have given a lot of good time to help us fix things, work on things, plus, you know, just come in to eat. So I'll chuckle because there are certain nights that more local audiences will come in because they know that's when they will see the other local audiences.
Yeah.
And then there are nights when you'll have a local person in here on a Friday night and they'll look around and see maybe one person in the place that they know. Mm. And they always laugh and joke and, you know, say, where do these people come from? And, you know, that kind of a thing. So I don't know if it had that kind of a ambiance necessarily when it was West Point Steakhouse, but, you know, it definitely had a good reputation. And we still have people that show up from time to time that don't know that West Point closed and they're from South Bend and they eat here, or always used to eat here when they drove through or whatever. You know,
oh,
what I mean?
Yeah. So they discover that it's
right,
now barbecue.
Right.
But they've made a good discovery.
Right. Hopefully.
Yeah.
Hopefully we've been able to, yeah, you know, to help them out. So.
Okay. Well, what are your favorite things that are on the menu, your personal favorites, as far as the smoked meats and maybe then also the Tex-Mex applications too?
Well, I mean, our wings are a really, really popular item. So that's something that I enjoy. I think in terms of the Tex-Mex, I probably like our pulled pork enchiladas the best. You know, I have personal preference to pork. I cooked pork for many, many years before I ever started even cooking beef. And so I like the pulled pork enchiladas. I think it's just a really good fit.
Mm-hmm.
And then those are probably a couple of my favorites. Of course, the brisket's great. I have access to it all the time. So, you know, it's becomes normalcy, I guess, for me. And then one of the star items we've really kind of brought to the top, we found that ribs have just been a great, great thing that the public really likes.
Mm-hmm.
So we do those on an alternating basis to make sure everything is really fresh and product is fresh, but that's been a huge hit. So we cook those every other Friday night.
In terms of looking ahead, do you see any major changes on the horizon, or are you still kind of going to sort of stick with what's going well right now? And
there are a lot of opportunities for a business like this, and it comes down to which direction you want to push your resources, I think. So, you know, with a business like ours, a lot of the excitement becomes around the Friday night, Saturday night destination dining. And so once that saturates itself to a degree, then you have to decide what's next. You know, do you want to try to be more attractive to weeknight diners? There's a portfolio of online purchasing in terms of people liking to buy things online, like for holidays and things.
Mm.
Catering is a big component that could be grown, and I try to think of the others. Takeout business is really changing the marketplace quite as substantially, and I think some people are trying to decide if they want to be involved in that or if that's beneficial to them as a business or not beneficial to them as a business.
Mm.
But those are things that I think about.
You've got lots of opportunities. It keeps you sharp and keeps you thinking, so it's all good. Lee, thank you so much for taking some time and inviting me in today and sharing your story of Eddie Joe's Ice House. I really appreciate it. It's been great.
Yeah, I appreciate it very much.
Lee Stanish is the owner, operator, barbecue master of Eddie Joe's Ice House in downtown West Point, Indiana. Learn more about Eddie Joe's Ice House on their website, ejicehouse.com. That's ejicehouse.com. And stay in touch with Indiana Home Cooks on Facebook and Instagram at Indiana Home Cooks and on the website, indianahomecooks.com. It would be a tremendous favor to me if you're listening on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Spotify. Yes, we are on Spotify now. If you listen at those platforms, please subscribe to the podcast so you'll not miss an episode. And when you subscribe on most of those platforms, you can also download the episodes for listening offline at a later time, if that's convenient for you. That's a great way to pass the time if you're traveling, listening to downloaded podcasts on your smartphone or your tablet. Bottom line, it helps me build audience if you're a subscriber on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, or Stitcher, and there's no cost to you, so it's a win-win. And I thank you for subscribing. Music on Indiana Home Cooks is by the Underscore Orchestra and Slancha at the Free Music Archive. Closing theme is by Leon Mercer. Thanks for listening. I'm Susan Mintert, and that's Indiana Home Cooks.